It's not hard. I can talk you through it. One thing first. She shook out of his grasp and ran back up the porch stairs. Lola was still curled in the same spot. She raised her head and thumped her tail limply when she saw Alex. Hey, Lola, good girl. Let me take a look at you. Alex sat cross-legged in front of her. She stroked Lola's side with one hand while searching for the wound with the other.
Is she okay?
Daniel asked softly. He was on the other side of the porch banister, his elbows resting on the edge of the floorboards. He seemed unwilling to get any closer to the house. She didn't blame him. Lola whimpered as Alex felt along her legs. She's lost some blood. It looks like the bullet went through her back left leg. I can't tell if it hit bone, but the bullet definitely passed through. She was lucky. He reached through the slats to rub Lola's nose.
Poor girl.
The stuff in the back of the Humvee must be in total chaos. I'm going to hunt up the first aid kit. Keep her calm, will you?
Sure.
Einstein followed Alex back to the vehicle, just as he'd trailed her to the porch. It surprised her how the silent support buoyed her, made her feel safe, despite all the evidence to the contrary. She opened the back of the Humvee, and an impatient Khan almost knocked her down. She dodged out of his way just in time as he sprang over her. She imagined the cargo hold was tight for him, though she had plenty of space as she crawled inside. Guns and ammo were strewn haphazardly, loose bullets rolling under her knees. There wasn't time to organize. Her conversation with Hector had been cut short. She hadn't been able to ask one last vital question. What happens when the job is done? Who was expecting a call? And when? At least there was the third house still waiting. Unless Hector had made a call between the first and second stops. Had he called his manager? Told him which address had been cleared, and which he was heading to next? Was the manager waiting for another call? Would he have realized that the call was overdue? She located the duffel that held her first aid kit. There was nothing she could do now except move fast and make the right decisions. The only problem was she still didn't know exactly what those right decisions were. Okay, she huffed as she and Einstein arrived back at Lola's side. She knelt beside Lola's legs and quickly realized it was too dark for her to see what she was doing. I need you to bring the Humvee around and give me some light, she said. Daniel lurched quickly away from the porch, a massive shadow hulking beside him. Khan, still on duty. She wondered how Khan and Einstein had decided to switch assignments. She pulled off her tactical gloves and replaced her bloody latex gloves with a fresh pair. She was just injecting Lola with a mild sedative when the brilliant lights of the Humvee came shooting through the banister slats. She adjusted her position so the glare was out of her face and on the wound. It looked like a clean through and through. She waited for Lola's eyes to droop before she started cleaning the wound. Lola's leg twitched a few times, but she didn't cry out. Antiseptic, then ointment, then gauze, then a splint and more gauze. It should heal well if she could keep Lola off it. She blew out a sigh. What were they going to do about all these dogs?
What's next? Daniel asked when she was done.
He was on the ground beside the porch, rifle in hands, scanning the dark plains around them. Can you throw a couple of stitches in my ear while I've got the stuff out?
He balked. I won't get it right.
It'll be easy, she assured him. Haven't you ever sewn on a button?
Not through human flesh,
he muttered, but he slung his rifle over his shoulder and started up the stairs as he spoke. She lit a match from the kit and sterilized the needle. It wasn't the highest standard of medical technique, but it was the best she could do under the circumstances. She waved the needle quickly back and forth to cool it, then poked the suture thread through the eye and knotted one end. She held it out to him along with a fresh pair of gloves. He put the gloves on and then reached slowly for the needle. He didn't seem to want to touch it. She tilted her head back and poured antiseptic across the wound, waiting for the scorching sting to run the course of the cut all the way to her ear. Then she angled her jaw toward him, making sure she was in the brightest beam of light. Probably just needs three little ones. Start at the back and pull through.
What about a local anesthetic? I've got enough painkiller in me already, she lied. She could feel the slash across her jaw like a brand, but she was out of survive, and anything else she could use would incapacitate her, at least partially. This wasn't an emergency. It was only pain. He knelt down beside her. He put his fingers gently under the edge of her chin.
This was very close to your jugular, he gasped, horrified.
Yeah, he was good. His face was out of her sight, so she couldn't interpret the little hitching sound in his breath. Do it, Daniel. We have to hurry. He sucked in a deep breath, and then she felt the needle pierce her earlobe. She was braced for it. She kept it off her face and didn't let her hands clutch into fists. She'd learned to localize her reactions. She clenched the muscles in her abdomen, letting the pressure vent there. Good, she said, as soon as she was sure she could keep her voice even. You're doing great. Now just fit the pieces together and stitch them in place. While she spoke, his fingers moved quickly through the task. She couldn't feel the needle in the severed bottom portion of her earlobe, so she only had to deal with the pain when he perforated the top half. Just three little stabs. It wasn't too bad after the first.
Do I tie a knot or something? He asked.
Yes, in the back, please. She could feel the pull of the thread tightening as he worked.
It's done.
She looked up at him and smiled. It tugged at her slashed jaw. Thank you. I would have had a hard time managing that on my own. He touched her cheek.
Here, let me bandage this for you.
She held still while he covered the wound with ointment, then taped a strip of gauze to her cheek. He wrapped her ear front and back.
Probably should have cleaned it first, he muttered.
It will do for now. Let's put Lola in the Humvee.
I'll get her.
Daniel gently lifted the sleeping Lola into his arms. Her long front paws and ears dangled out from his arms and wiggled with every step he took. Alex felt a bubble of inappropriate humor rising in her chest and swallowed against it. There was no time for hysteria. Daniel laid Lola in the space behind the passenger seat. There were only the two front seats in the Humvee. Kevin had removed the rest to leave room for cargo, she guessed.
What now?
Daniel asked as he walked back to where she was still sitting on the porch. He was probably wondering why she wasn't doing something proactive. He didn't know she was procrastinating. She took a deep breath and steadied her shoulders. Give me the phone. It's time to talk to your brother.
Should we be moving?
There's one thing more I need to do, but I want to tell him first.
What?
We really ought to burn the house down. His eyes widened as he stared at her. Slowly, he pulled the phone from his vest pocket.
I should make the call, he said.
He already hates me, she countered.
But this was my fault.
You weren't the one who hired a team of hitmen. He shook his head and pressed the button to power up the phone. Fine, she muttered. As she packed up her first aid supplies, she watched Daniel from the corner of her eye. He pulled up the only number that had ever called, but before he could touch it, the phone rang again. Daniel sucked in a deep breath, the same way he had before making the first pass on her ear. She imagined this conversation would be the harder of the tasks. He hit the screen. She could hear Kevin shrieking so loudly that at first she thought the phone was on speaker mode.
You don't hang up on me, you... Kev, it's me. Kev, it's Danny. What the hell is happening? It's my fault, Kev. I was an idiot. I ruined everything. I'm so sorry. What are you babbling about? Arnie's dead, Kev. I'm so sorry. And some of the dogs. I'm not sure how many. It's all my fault. I wish I could tell you how... Put the poison lady on the phone! This is on me, Kev. I messed up.
Kevin's voice was calmer when he interrupted now.
There's no time for this, Danny. Give her the phone. I need someone who can talk sense.
She stood up and reached for the phone. Daniel watched anxiously as she held it a few inches away from her ear.
Are you secure?
Kevin asked. Surprised by his businesslike detachment, she answered in the same tone. For the moment, but we've got to move.
Have you torched the house?
I was just about to.
There's kerosene in the closet under the stairs.
Thanks.
Call me when you're on the road.
He hung up. Well, that had gone better than she'd hoped. She handed the phone back to Daniel. His expression was blank with surprise. The gas in the house would long since have dissipated, so she didn't bother with the mask. Danny followed her inside, but she made Einstein keep watch at the door. Get some clothes out of Kevin's room, she instructed. She could have sent him upstairs for the first set he'd borrowed, but that would take more time, and she didn't know how he would react to the bodies. She could see his eyes cutting away to the sofa that obscured Arnie, and then back to her. They both had to keep it together. They still had a long night ahead of them if they were going to be alive tomorrow. When you have enough for a few days, get to the kitchen and grab anything that's non-perishable. Water, too, as much as we've got. He nodded and headed down the hall to Kevin's room. She darted up the stairs.
Do you want these guns?
He called up after her. She dodged around the bodies, careful not to slip in the blood slick. No, those have killed people. If we get caught, I don't want to be linked to anything. Kevin's guns will be clean. In her room, she stripped off her blood-spattered clothes and pulled on clean jeans and a t-shirt. She gathered up her sleeping bag, wrapping the rest of her clothes in it, then grabbed her lab kit in her open hand and kicked the bloody clothes into the hallway. She hurried back down the stairs and out to the car with her awkward load. While Daniel foraged in the kitchen, she located the kerosene. Kevin had 3 5-gallon gas cans stashed together. He could only have intended them for lighting up the house. She was glad that he was so prepared and businesslike. It meant his reaction, once Daniel was safe, was likely to be more pragmatic than violent. She hoped. She started upstairs, making sure her clothes and the bodies were well saturated with the kerosene. The wooden floors wouldn't need as much help. She splashed the baseboards in all 3 rooms, then trailed the rest down the stairs. She grabbed another can and hurried through the ground floor. It was the first time she'd seen the other bedrooms. They were both large and well-appointed, with luxurious attached baths. She was glad Arnie had had a comfortable life here. She wished she could have done something to spare him this. But even if she and Daniel had left the first day the missing person trap had run on the news, Arnie would still have ended up like this. It was a depressing thought. Daniel's fingerprints were in the dog's outbuilding, but there was no way to fool Karsten's counterpart at the CIA into thinking Daniel or Kevin had died here, so it didn't really matter. They would know Daniel was on the run. She didn't want to torch the outbuilding and endanger the animals. It didn't have a wide gravel skirt like the house did, which would hopefully prevent a wildfire. No doubt Kevin had laid the gravel for exactly this reason. Daniel was waiting for her in front of the Humvee. Back this up, she said, waving toward the Humvee. See if you can get the dogs to move too. He got to work. She had the pack of matches from her first aid kit. She'd left a nice thick trail of kerosene down the middle of the porch steps, so it was easy to set that trail alight, and then get out of the way before the blaze really got going. When she turned, the dogs were automatically backing away from the flames. That was good. Alex opened the driver's side door and called for Einstein. He jumped over the seat in one bound and then positioned himself next to Lola. His ears were up and his tongue out. He still looked eager. Alex envied his energy and positivity. Daniel was walking through the crowd of surviving animals, giving each one an emphatic at ease. She hoped that would help when the fire truck started rolling up. The noise of the shootout wouldn't have carried to any of the distant neighbors, but the orange light of the fire against the black night sky was another matter. They had to run now. She couldn't think of anything else she could do for the dogs. It felt like failure. These animals had saved her and Daniel's lives. A rumble just behind her head startled Alex. She spun and found herself face to face with Khan. He was staring at her in what seemed like an impatient way, as if he were waiting for her to move. His nose pointed over her shoulder toward Einstein. Oh, she said, as she realized he was trying to get into the car. Sorry, Khan. I need you to stay. She'd never seen an animal look so offended in her life. He didn't move, just stared into her face as if demanding an explanation. She was the more surprised of the two of them when she suddenly threw her arms around his neck and buried her face against his shoulder. I'm sorry, big guy, she whispered into his fur. I wish I could take you with me. I owe you huge. Take care of the others for me. You're in charge, okay? She leaned away, stroking the sides of his thick neck. He looked slightly mollified and took an unwilling step back. At ease, she said quietly. She patted him once more, then turned to the Humvee. Daniel was already belted into the passenger seat.
Are you all right?
Daniel asked quietly as she climbed in. It was obvious he wasn't talking about physical injuries. Not really, she laughed once, and there was an edge of the hysteria she was fighting in the sound. Khan was still watching as she pulled away from the house. Once through the gate, she donned the goggles and turned the headlights off. It was safer to drive the Humvee across the open plains rather than stay on the only road that led to the ranch. Eventually, they reached another road. It was even paved. She ditched the goggles and put the headlights on as she turned northwest. She didn't have a destination in mind, only distance. She needed to get as far away from Kevin's ranch as possible before the sun rose. Chapter 20 Kevin picked up on the first ring.
Okay, Oleander, where do we stand?
Was his greeting. We're headed north in the Humvee. I've got Daniel, Einstein, and Lola with me. We managed to scavenge some of what we need, but not much. She heard him blow out a relieved breath when she said Einstein's name, but the edge was still there in his voice when he asked,
The Humvee? The truck is blown?
Yes. He thought for a second.
So, only night driving until you can find something new.
Easier said than done. We've both got major face problems.
Yeah. I saw Daniel on the news. But yours can't be that bad anymore. Throw some makeup on.
It's gotten slightly worse over the course of the evening.
Ah.
He clicked his tongue a few times.
Danny?
He asked, and she could hear the tension he was trying to hide. Not a scratch. The hands didn't count. They'd done that to themselves.
She made me stay in the car,
Daniel yelled loud enough for his brother to hear.
Good job,
Kevin responded.
How many were there?
Six. He sucked a breath in.
Agents?
No, actually. Get this. They put a hit out with the mob.
What?
It was mostly muscle, but they had at least one authentic professional in the group.
You took out all of them?
The dogs did most of the work. They were magnificent, by the way. He grunted in acknowledgement.
Why'd you bring Lola?
Shot in the leg. I was afraid that if someone found her, they would put her down. Speaking of, should I call animal control? She asked. I worry that when the firemen get there...
I'll take care of it. I've got a contingency plan in place for them.
Good. She would never think of herself as the most prepared again. Kevin was the king of prepared.
What's your plan now?
She laughed, and there was the sound of hysteria again. No idea, actually. I'm thinking we camp out of the Humvee for a few days. After that, she trailed off.
You don't have a place?
Not one where I can park this beast or hide two large dogs. I've never felt so conspicuous in my life.
I'll think of something.
What took you so long to call? She asked. I thought you were dead. Daniel gasped. He stared at her, shocked.
Getting set up. These things take time. I can't be everywhere at once. I had to plan a lot of cameras.
A call would have been nice.
I didn't know you guys were going to blow everything.
His voice got suddenly much lower.
What did the idiot do? No, don't answer. I don't want him to hear. Just yes or no. Did he call someone?
No, she snapped, irritated.
Wait. The truck is blown. He didn't leave the house, did he?
She wanted to say, no one told him not to, but Daniel would know they were discussing him. She didn't respond, keeping her eyes straight ahead, though she wanted to sneak a look at Daniel to see if he'd heard any of it. Kevin sighed.
Not an ounce of common sense.
So many things she wanted to say to that, but she couldn't think of a discreet way to phrase any of them. He changed the subject.
Arnie, was it bad?
No, he didn't see it coming. He wouldn't have felt anything.
His real name was Ernesto,
Kevin said, but it felt like he was saying it to himself rather than to her.
He was a good partner. We had a good run. A short run, but a good one.
He cleared his throat.
Okay, now tell me everything that happened.
Then lower.
Except whatever he did to set it off. He's probably traumatized enough.
Alex ran through the events of the evening, keeping it clinical and glossing over the gruesome parts. When she said simply, "I questioned him," Kevin would have a pretty clear picture of what that meant.
So what happened to your face?
He was very flexible, and he had some kind of throwing blade in the lining of his sleeve.
That's rough,
he said gloomily, and she knew what he was thinking. Facial scars were bad news when you wanted to keep a low profile. They were too easy to remember and recognize. Suddenly, the search changed from, have you seen a short, nondescript female, unknown hair length or color, or a man fitting that same description? To, have you seen a person with this scar? Well, she concluded, it appears the people in charge pegged you for the win. I won't pretend I'm not insulted. We'll have to tweak the plan. The bait has to come from you, and it needs to go to the right person. Do you have any idea who that would be yet? Kevin was quiet for a minute.
When word gets back to my guy about what happened tonight, well, we might not need the email. He's going to have to talk to your guy about this. I'm ready. I'll see them do it. Then we can decide if we need more.
Sounds good.
By the way,
he said in his covert voice,
I know you sanitized the story for the kid. I want the whole thing when I see you again.
She rolled her eyes. Right.
Look, Ollie, don't let this go to your head, but you did good. Real good. You saved Danny's life. Thank you.
She was so surprised, it took her a minute to respond. I think we're quits. Without your dogs or your bat cave, we wouldn't have made it out, so thank you.
You could have taken off as soon as you saw that first newscast. You knew they thought you were dead, but you stayed to keep a virtual stranger safe. Though I'm sure you'd love nothing better than to be rid of both of us. That's honor right there. I owe you.
She said noncommittally. They didn't need to discuss everything tonight.
Let me talk to him before you hang up,
Daniel whispered. Daniel wants to talk.
Put him on.
She handed the phone over.
Kev, don't beat yourself up, Danny,
she heard Kevin tell him. She wondered if Daniel had been able to hear just as clearly.
Yeah,
Daniel responded, morose.
I'm only responsible for getting Arnie murdered tonight, not to mention the dogs. Why should I suffer? Look, what's done is done.
Funny, Alex said that too.
Poison Girl knows the score. This is a new world, kid. It's got a higher body count. Now, I'm not saying that things like this won't affect you. You just can't let them cloud your vision.
Kevin's voice dropped into a lower register, and Alex was glad to know that Daniel probably hadn't been able to make out the quieter part of their conversation. But she also wanted to know what Kevin didn't want her to hear.
I think so,
Daniel said. A pause.
Maybe not. I will. Yes. Okay. What are you going to do about the dogs? We had to leave Khan. Yeah.
Kevin's voice was back to normal volume.
I love that monster, but he's not exactly travel size, is he? There's a breeder not too far away that Arnie's worked with in the past. He's more a competitor than a friend, but he knows the value of my dogs. Arnie made a deal with him that if we ever wanted out, we'd sell him our stock. Arnie also sort of implied that we might decide to do that suddenly, without any warning and in the middle of the night. I'll call him and he'll meet up with animal control before they do anything stupid. Won't the cops wonder? I'll coach him. He'll say Arnie called when he heard shots or something. Don't worry, the dogs will be okay.
Daniel sighed, relieved.
It does piss me off that he's getting his hands on Khan, free of charge. He's been trying to buy him for years.
I'm sorry. Seriously, kid, don't sweat it.
You don't last in this life by getting attached. I know how to start over. Now, be good and do whatever the Oleander says, okay?
Wait, Kev, I had an idea. That's why I wanted to talk to you.
You've got an idea?
Alex could hear the skepticism from 3 feet away.
Yes, actually I was thinking about the McKinley's cabin by the lake.
Kevin was silent for a second.
Now's not really the time for a trip down memory lane, kid. I'm actually 2 minutes older than you, kid, which I'm sure you haven't forgotten, and I don't want to reminisce. I was thinking that the McKinleys only ever used the cabin in the winter, and that your CIA people probably wouldn't know that much detail about our childhood, and that I know where Mr. McKinley always kept the key.
Hey, that's not bad, Danny.
Thanks. That would be about what, 18 hours from the ranch? Just 2 nights driving, and that'll bring you closer to my position. Didn't the McKinleys used to keep a Suburban out there?
We can't steal their car, Kevin. In the darkness, though more than 1,000 miles apart, Alex felt like she was exchanging a loaded glance with Kevin, and maybe an eye roll, on his part at least.
We'll talk about finding a car later. Tell the Oleander to take better care of her face next time. We're going to need it.
Yes, because I'm sure she so enjoys having people beat it bloody that it will be hard for her to quit.
Yeah, yeah. Call me if you have any troubles. I'll make contact when I know more about our friends in Washington.
Kevin disconnected. Daniel stared at the phone for a minute before putting it away. He took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
How are you holding up? She asked.
Nothing feels real.
Let me see your hand.
He stretched his left arm out to her, and she took his hand with her right. His temperature was warmer than hers. She felt his wrist, and the pulse seemed even. The scratches and punctures on his palm were shallow. They'd already stopped bleeding on their own. She glanced over at him and then looked back to the road. It was too dark to be able to assess his coloring with any degree of certainty.
What was that?
He asked as she released his hand. Looking for signs of shock. Do you feel nauseated?
No, but then I kind of feel as if I should, if you know what I mean. Like, I will when I can process everything.
Let me know if you start to feel dizzy, faint, or cold.
You feel cold? Are you sure you're not going into shock?
Not entirely, I suppose. If I feel dizzy, I'll pull over, and you can drive. He reached over, took her gloved hand off the wheel, and held it loosely, letting their arms dangle in the space between seats. He took another deep breath.
I heard all those shots, so close together, and I thought...
I know. Thanks for staying in the car like I asked. It's good to know I can trust you.
He didn't say anything.
What? She asked.
Well, when you put it like that,
he said, sounding ashamed.
I don't really want to admit this, but I did get out for a few minutes. I was about to go into the house, but Einstein stopped me. And then I realized that one way or another, things were decided inside. And if they had got you, my best bet to kill the bastards would be from the Humvee. I wasn't going to let them walk away, Alex. Not a chance.
She squeezed his hand lightly.
Do you remember what Kevin told me before? About visualization?
She shook her head. It sounded only vaguely familiar.
We were at the shooting range for the first time, and I said I didn't think I could shoot another person.
He laughed a dark little chuckle.
He told me to visualize someone I cared about in danger.
As he spoke, it came back clearly.
Ah. Well, I get it now. And he was right. The second I realized someone had killed Arnie, and that he was coming for you next, he shook his head. I didn't realize I was capable of feeling so primal.
I told you that you would get in touch with your instincts, she said lightly. The joking tone, recalled from that day at the range, felt all kinds of wrong the instant the words were out. Her voice was somber when she added, I wish it hadn't happened like this. He squeezed her hand this time.
It's going to be okay.
She made an effort to focus. So, where exactly are we headed?
Tallahassee.
We did a couple of Christmases there when we were kids. Some family friends kept a place there so they could get out of the snow. They must have liked their privacy because the cabin is in the middle of nowhere. It's not actually on the lake, but it's swampy, and the mosquitoes will be murder this time of year. You should be in real estate. You're sure no one will be there? I haven't seen the McKinleys since my parents' funeral, but they never went south in the summertime during all the years I knew them. It was always just their winter spot. Well, we might as well head that way as any other. If that cabin won't work, maybe we can find something else that's empty. She saw a sign for State Highway 70 heading north. We'll have to turn east, go through Oklahoma City, then down through Dallas. It'll be good, if anyone's looking, to be headed back into Texas. Makes us look innocent.
We only defended ourselves.
That won't matter. If we got picked up for what just happened, the police would have to take us in. Even if we explained every detail and they believed every word, which is unlikely, to put it mildly. They'd still have to put us in a cell for a while. It wouldn't take long. The people who hired the hitmen would have no trouble getting to us in jail. We'd be sitting ducks. He felt the tremble in her fingers and rubbed his thumb soothingly across the back of her hand.
So, you're saying a crime spree is a bad idea right now?
She couldn't believe he was the one trying to cheer her up. Probably, she agreed. But it might come to that. She glanced down at the gas gauge, then hissed. This thing is burning through gas like it wants to piss me off.
What can we do?
I'm going to have to go into a gas station, pay with cash.
But your face?
There's no help for it. I'll just pretend I was in a car accident, which actually is not pretend at all, is it? Anyway, there's nothing else I can do. The gas-guzzling monster forced Alex to stop much earlier than she would have liked. She followed the signs in Oklahoma City to the airport, guessing that the gas stations around it would be somewhat busy even late at night. Also, if anyone noticed them here, he might assume they were planning to fly out. Any ensuing search would be concentrated on the airport. She'd had Daniel find her oversized hoodie while she was driving. She slipped into it now, wishing it were cooler out so that she would look more normal. There were two other vehicles, one taxi and one work truck. Both male drivers eyed the Humvee, of course. She moved in her boy slouch as she got out and stuck the nozzle into the tank. While it was filling, she slouched her way into the store. She grabbed a box of granola bars and a six-pack of bottled water and took them to the 50-something woman at the counter. The woman had bleached blonde hair with an inch of dark roots, nicotine-stained teeth, and a name tag that said Beverly. At first, she didn't pay much attention to Alex, just rang up the goods, but then Alex had to speak.
"Pump six," she said, in the lowest register that wouldn't sound put on.
Beverly looked up, and her mascara-smeared eyes opened round.
"Aw, sweet hell, honey! What happened to your face?"
"Car accident," Alex muttered.
"Everyone okay?"
"Yeah." Alex looked pointedly down at the cash in her hand, waiting to count it out. From the corner of her eye, she saw the taxi drive away.
"Well, I hope you feel better soon."
"Thanks. What's the total?"
"Oh, is this right? Seems high. 103.55?
Alex handed Beverly 6 20s and waited for the change. Another truck, a big black F-250, pulled into the pump behind the Humvee. She watched as three tall, thin men got out. As two of them walked into the mini-mart, she revised her assessment. They were very tall, teenage boys, half of a basketball team, maybe. Like her, they wore dark hoodies. At least that made her unseasonable getup look more normal.
"That sure is a big truck you got out there," Beverly commented.
"Yeah."
"Must be a pain to keep that thing full."
"Yeah." Alex held her hand out impatiently. The boys came in, noisy and boisterous. The smell of beer and marijuana drifted in through the door with them. Outside, the work truck pulled out of the lot.
"Oh, here you go,"
Beverly said, her voice suddenly impersonal.
1645.
"Thanks." Beverly was distracted by the newcomers. She stared over Alex's head, her eyes narrowed. The big boys were headed for the liquor aisle. Hopefully they would be a huge pain as they tried to get fake IDs past Beverly. Anything that would make Alex fade in her memory. Alex headed for the automatic door with her head down. She didn't need more than one witness. With a thud, her head knocked into the chest of the third boy. The first thing she registered was the smell. His sweatshirt reeked of whiskey. She looked up automatically when he grabbed her by the shoulders.
"Watch yourself, little player."
He was a thick white kid, not as tall as the others. She tried to shake him off. He held on tighter with one hand, yanking her hood back with the other.
"Hey, it's a girl."
Then louder toward the boys by the refrigerated cases.
"Looky what I found."
Alex's voice was ice. She was not in the mood for this nonsense. "Get your hands off me."
"You leave that gal alone or I'm calling the police," Beverly called shrilly. "I've got the phone in my hand."
Alex wanted to scream. This was all she needed.
"Relax, old bag. We got plenty to go around."
The other two, one black, one Hispanic, were already in place to back their friend up. Alex slid a thin syringe from her belt. This wouldn't help her stay under the radar, but she had to put this kid down and get out of here before Beverly called the cops.
"I've dialed the 9 and the first one," Beverly warned them. "You all get out now."
Alex tried to yank herself out of the boy's grip, but the grinning idiot had both hands locked around her upper arms now. She angled the needle.
"Is there a problem, son?"
"No," Alex moaned internally.
"What?"
the white kid said aggressively, dropping her and pivoting to face the newcomer. He then took a quick step back, and she had to duck out of his way. She'd spent so much time around Daniel that she'd forgotten how tall he really was. He had an inch on even the tallest kid, and he stood with wider shoulders and much more assurance. At least he'd put a ball cap on, hiding his hair and shading his face a little. The beginnings of his beard were dark enough to slightly camouflage the contours of his face. That was good. But it was not good that he'd stuck a Glock, in a very obvious way, into the waistband of his jeans.
"No, no problem, man," the black kid said.
He grabbed the white kid's shoulder and tugged him back a step.
"Good. Why don't you head on out, then?"
The white kid thrust his chest forward.
"When we get what we came for."
Daniel did something different with the way he held his jaw. Alex couldn't quite put her finger on it, but suddenly his face was the opposite of friendly. He leaned in toward the troublemaker.
"Now."
There was no bluster in how he spoke, just absolute authority.
"Come on,"
the black kid insisted. He shoved the white kid past Daniel while tugging on the sleeve of the third boy. They walked quickly to the truck, elbowing each other and scuffling a little. Alex kept her back to Beverly, nudging Daniel so he would turn that way too. The boys got in the truck and the driver punched the gas, swerving around the Humvee with tires squealing.
"Hey, thanks, buddy,"
Beverly cooed at him.
"I appreciate your help."
"Sure thing," he responded, holding one arm out courteously for Alex to exit first. Alex hurried back to the Humvee. She could feel Daniel close behind her and just hoped he had the sense to keep his head down and not turn around. "Well, I don't know how that could have gone worse," Alex said disgustedly when they were back on the road. "That woman will remember us for the rest of her natural life."
"Sorry."
"You just had to go in there like some cowboy with a gun in your pants."
"We do have Texas plates," he pointed out.
"And what was I supposed to do? That kid was about to have a violent and prolonged episode of projectile vomiting. It would have incapacitated him totally and perhaps made enough of a mess that Beverly would have forgotten all about me."
"Oh."
"Yeah. Oh, indeed. I can take care of myself, Daniel." His jaw suddenly got hard again, like it had in the gas station store.
"I know that, Alex, but there might actually come a time when you need help. When that happens, I'm not going to be waiting in the car again. You should probably wrap your head around that now."
"I'll tell you when I need backup."
"And I'll be there," he snapped.
She let the quarrel drop, and for a moment there was no sound but the roar of the oversized engine burning through the new gas. Then he sighed.
I should have known you were one step ahead, he said.
She nodded her acceptance of the implied apology, though she had mixed feelings about his declarations.
Where did you learn how to do that?
She asked after another short lull.
What?
Intimidate people.
My school is exactly an exclusive private prep. Anyway, most kids just want someone to take control. It makes them feel more secure.
She laughed. Then those boys will sleep sound tonight. The rest of the night was less fraught. Daniel dozed against the window, snoring lightly, until the next gas stop, about 20 miles east of Dallas. The sleepy man in the booth showed no interest in Alex's face. When they were away from the gas station's cameras, she pulled off on a dark shoulder and traded seats with Daniel. He claimed to be wide awake and ready. She napped as best she could until the next stop, south of Shreveport, where they switched seats again. Dawn was coming. Alex searched the fancy GPS for a close-by national park or wildlife reserve and found they were not far from the huge expanse of the Kisatchie National Forest. She headed for the corner of the park that came closest to the I-49, then wandered through back roads until she found an area isolated and overgrown enough that she felt comfortable pulling over into the thick shade of some tightly grouped trees. She backed into a barely wide enough space between the tree trunks and then reversed until there was just room for the rear hatch to open. When she cracked her door, the humid heat outside quickly overpowered the cooler air inside the vehicle. Einstein was thrilled to get out of the car and relieve himself. It was harder for Lola. Alex had to redress Lola's wound when she was done. Daniel had food and water out for them before Alex was finished. Then Daniel had the easier job of relieving himself, and Alex got the more complicated version. She'd lived out of a car before, though, and while it wasn't her favorite thing, she was prepared. She took a look at the front of the Humvee and had to admit she was impressed. To the naked eye, there was no evidence that they'd been in even a minor fender bender. The breakfast options were minimal. Alex found herself with the same box of Pop-Tarts that she'd started with her first morning at the ranch. Daniel took a packet, too.
What are we going to do about food? He asked.
Alex wiped her arm across her forehead, drying the sweat before it could drip into her eyes. Tonight I'll stock up a little at each gas station. It will get us through a few days. Let me know if you have any requests. Alex yawned, then hissed when the motion pulled at the cut on her face.
Do you have aspirin?
She nodded, tiredly. That might be a good idea. We both need to get some sleep. The dogs will be fine if we just leave them outside, right? I don't want them to have to be cooped up all night and all day, too. Alex dug up a couple of Motrin while Daniel shoved the mess in the back of the Humvee to the sides of the bed, leaving a narrow, flat space in the middle for them. Satisfied that she'd done everything she could, Alex spread out her sleeping bag and rolled down the top edge for a pillow. It felt normal in an abnormal way to have Daniel lie down beside her, instinctive and comfortable for him to wrap one arm around her waist and bury his face in the hollow of her neck. The scratch of his short beard tickled her skin, but she didn't mind. She was starting to drift off when she became conscious of his movement beside her. At first, she thought he was beginning to snore, but the shuddering didn't pause. She grabbed his fingers at her waist and found them trembling. She jerked up and twisted to face him. His eyes flew wide when she moved so suddenly, and he started to sit up. She pushed him down with one hand on his chest.
"What's wrong?"
he whispered. She looked at his face. It was hard to tell in the shade, but he looked paler than before. She should have been watching for this. Now that they had the chance to figuratively lay their weapons down for a moment, of course the severe strain of the night before would catch up to them. Probably not authentic shock, more likely just a traditional panic attack. "Nothing, except maybe with you." She touched his forehead. It felt clammy. "Do you feel sick?"
"No, I'm fine."
"You were shaking." He shook his head and took a deep breath.
"Sorry. I was just thinking about how close it was."
"Don't. It's over. You're safe."
I know.
I won't let anything happen to you. He laughed once, and she could hear the same sound of hysteria that had been in her own laugh last night.
I know, he repeated. I'll be fine. But what about you? Are you safe?
He pulled her down onto his chest, cradling the damaged side of her face carefully in his long fingers, and whispered into her hair.
I could have lost you. Just like that. Everything that means anything to me is gone. I've lost my home, my job, my life. I've lost myself. I'm hanging on by my fingernails, Alex, and it's you I'm hanging on to. If something happens to you, I don't know what that means for me. I don't know how I keep going.
I'm dealing with the rest, Alex, but I can't lose you too. I can't. Another shudder ran through his body.
It's okay,
she murmured uncertainly, reaching up to rest her fingers against his lips. I'm here. Was that the right thing to say? She didn't have any experience comforting someone. Even when her mother had been in the last stages of the illness that had killed her, Judy didn't want sympathy, and she didn't want lies. If Juliana were to say something like, "You look great today, Mom," Judy's response was always along the lines of, "Don't bother with that nonsense. I have a mirror." It never seemed to occur to Judy that Juliana might need comfort. After all, Juliana wasn't the one who was dying. She'd learned early not to seek sympathy for herself. She'd never really known how to show it to someone else. She would be more comfortable with the clinical, explaining that what he was feeling now was just a natural response to the specter of a violent death. But she'd said things like that to him before, and she knew they didn't help. So she found herself mimicking things she'd seen on television, speaking softly, stroking the side of his face. We're okay. It's over. She wondered if she should put the sleeping bag over him, just in case, though it was already sweltering and he didn't feel cold. Still, she'd already come to the conclusion that he ran at a warmer temperature than she did, both physically and metaphorically. His breathing still sounded rough. She pulled her head free and then propped herself up so she could examine his face. He was no longer just pale. His soft eyes were haunted, tormented, his jaw tight against the panic he was trying to control. A raised line pulsed in his forehead. He stared at her like he was pleading for a release from pain. His expression ignited a nightmare of a memory, the memory of his interrogation, and she impulsively threw her arms around his neck, pulling his head up off the floor of the Humvee and hugging it tight to her chest to hide that face. She felt her own convulsive shiver, and the clinical side of her brain let her know that she was every bit as traumatized as he was. Her non-clinical side didn't care what the reason was. A wave of panic was washing through her, and she felt as if she couldn't hold him close enough to reassure herself that he was actually alive and safe and here. As if she might suddenly blink and be back inside her black tent with Daniel screaming in agony, or worse, she would open her eyes to the dark upstairs hallway only to find Daniel's bleeding body at her feet instead of the hitman's. Her pulse spiked, and she couldn't breathe. Daniel rolled their bodies so he was at her side, and his hands peeled hers free from his head. For a second, she thought he was about to take the comforter's role, at which she had failed so spectacularly. But then their eyes met, and she was looking into a mirror of all the turmoil and fear in her own head. Fear of loss. Fear of having, because that made the loss possible. Rather than comfort, the depth of his fear multiplied hers. She could lose him, and she didn't know how to live with that.
Chapter 21. Their lips crushed together so suddenly she wasn't sure who had moved first. And then their bodies were tangling together with a kind of desperate fury, lips and fingers, tongues and teeth. Breathing was secondary, and she managed it only in broken pants that left her still dizzy. She wanted nothing but to be closer, and then closer, to be inside his skin somehow, so that he could never be ripped away from her. She felt the scald as the wound along her jaw reopened, and all the bruises, old and new, flared to life, but the pain did nothing to distract from that acute need. They grappled almost like adversaries, turning and twisting together in the limits of the small space, slamming against the duffel bags, and then back to the floor. She was amazed at how electrifying his brute strength was. Strength in a man had always been something to fear, but now she thrilled to it. Fabric tore, and she couldn't guess who it belonged to. She remembered the texture of his skin, the shape of his muscles under her hands, but she had not imagined they could feel like this against her own. Closer, her blood pulsed. Closer. And then he suddenly jerked away, his mouth sliding from hers with a choked gasp. An anxious whine sounded at her feet. She leaned over and saw Einstein with his jaws locked on Daniel's ankle. Einstein whimpered again.
Einstein, at ease, he growled, kicking to free his foot. Get off!
Einstein let him go, looking to her nervously. At ease. Her voice was husky. It's okay. With a hesitant huff, Einstein dropped out of the open hatch. Daniel rolled up and slammed the door shut. He turned toward her on his knees, his pupils dilated and his eyes wild. He gritted his teeth as if he were fighting for some kind of control. She reached up for him, her fingers stretching to hook into the waistband of his jeans, and he collapsed into her with a low groan.
Alex, Alex, he breathed against her neck. Stay with me. Don't leave.
Even in the frenzy of the moment, she was aware what he was asking, and she meant what she said when she answered, knowing it could be the worst kind of mistake.
I will, she promised roughly. I won't.
Their mouths locked together again, and she could feel his heart drumming a syncopated rhythm against her own, aligned beneath their skin, because his mirrored hers. The shrill peal of the phone pierced through the lower register sounds, the double heartbeat, the gasping breaths, and had her pushing away from him in a different kind of panic. He shook his head quickly once, eyes closed, as if trying to remember where he was. She sat up, looking for the source of the sound.
I've got it, Daniel said, gasping.
He shoved his hand in his jeans pocket as the phone pealed again. He looked at the number, then hit answer with his thumb. With his left hand, he pulled her back against his chest.
Kev?
Daniel answered between pants.
Danny, hey, you guys safe? Yeah. What are you doing? Trying to get some sleep. Sounds like you're running a marathon.
The phone scared me. Nerves a little frayed, you know?
He lied so smoothly that she almost smiled in spite of the tumult inside her.
Oh, right. Sorry. Let me talk to Oleander. You mean Alex? Whatever. Give her the phone.
She tried to slow her breathing to sound normal.
Yes?
What? Don't tell me the phone scared you, too.
I am not a black ops agent, and it's been a very long night.
I'll keep it quick. I found my guy. Does the name Devers mean anything to you?
She thought for a second, working to pull her mind back to the things that mattered. Yes, I know the name. It was on some of the files when information was being extracted for the CIA. He never came in to monitor an interrogation, though. Is he a supervisor over there?
He's more than a supervisor. He's second in command these days, with an eye to moving up. He was one of several potentials I was monitoring. Early this morning, Devers gets a call, punches a few walls, then makes his own call. I know this guy. He loves to make the peon scurry. He doesn't leave his office. He sends an aide to bring the person he wants to him. Always the power play. But after that second call, he goes running out to see your man Karsten like a gopher. They met up at a random little residential park miles away from both their offices, and then went for a leisurely and sweaty walk, looking like they wanted to murder each other the whole time. It's Devers, for sure.
What are you thinking?
I think I still want the email. I need to see who else knows about this. Taking out Devers won't be too hard, but it just tips the other guys off if he's not alone. Have you got a pen?
Give me a sec. She crawled to the front seat and located her backpack. She dug for a pen, then scribbled the email address he gave her onto the back of a gas receipt. When? She asked.
Tonight, he decided. After you've gotten some sleep and have your nerve back.
I'll send it from Baton Rouge. Do you have a script, or do you want me to wing it?
You know the gist. Don't make it sound too cerebral.
I think I could channel some caveman.
Perfect. Once you trade cars with the McKinleys, start heading up here.
He switched to his library voice, but Daniel was so close it was a wasted effort.
Danny gonna give you trouble about staying behind?
She tilted her face up toward Daniel's. It was easy to read his reaction. Yeah, I'm not so sure it's a good idea anyway. Call me paranoid, but I don't believe in safe houses anymore. Daniel bent down to press his lips hard against her forehead, which made it difficult to pay attention to what Kevin was saying.
Figure a place for Lola. How bad is your face? Oleander?
Huh?
Your face. What does it look like?
Big bandage across my left jaw and ear. As she spoke, Daniel leaned closer to examine her wounds and then drew in a sharp breath. Plus all the original fun.
That could play,
Kevin said.
Lola's injured too. I'll feed them a story that will keep them satisfied.
Who?
The dog boarding place for Lola. Damn, Ollie, you need some sleep. You're getting dumber by the second.
Maybe I'll write your email now, while I'm in the right frame of mind.
Call me when you're on the road again.
Kevin hung up.
You're bleeding through the bandage,
Daniel said anxiously. She handed him the phone. It's fine. I should have glued it last night.
Let's take care of it now.
She looked up at his face. The panic and ferocity in his eyes had dimmed to simple concern. His chest was still slick with sweat, but his breathing was regular. She wasn't sure she had reached a similar state of calm.
Right now? She asked.
He gave her a measured look.
Yes, right now.
Is it bleeding that much? She touched the gauze gingerly, but felt only a bit of warm wet. From his expression, she'd expected blood to be gushing out in a torrent.
It's bleeding. That's enough. Where's the first aid kit?
With a sigh, she turned to the piled duffels. The wrong one was on top, so she had to readjust. While she dug, she felt his fingers cautiously brushing along her left shoulder blade.
You're all over bruises,
he murmured. His fingers followed the line of her arm.
These look fresh.
I got tackled, she admitted, as she pulled out the kit and turned around.
You never told me what happened in the house,
he commented. You don't want to know.
Maybe I do.
Okay, I don't want you to know. Daniel took the first aid kit from her hands and then crossed his legs and set it between them. She followed suit with a heavy sigh, angling the left side of her face toward him. Gently, he started easing the tape from her skin. You can do that faster, she told him.
I'll do it my way.
They sat in silence for a moment while he worked. The stillness allowed her body to remind her how exhausted she was.
Why don't you want me to know?
He asked, as he dabbed a medicated wipe against her skin.
Do you think I can't handle it?
No, I just...
What?
The way you look at me now, I don't want that to change. From the corner of her eye, she saw him smile.
You don't have to worry about that.
She shrugged in response.
How do I do this?
He asked, pulling her super glue from the case. Push the edges of the cut together, draw a line of glue across the top, then hold it till the glue dries. About a minute. She suppressed a wince as he pressed his fingertips firmly against her skin. The familiar smell of the adhesive filled the space between them.
Does this hurt?
It's fine.
Do you ever get tired of being tough?
She rolled her eyes. The pain is manageable, thank you. He leaned away to examine his work.
It looks messy, he told her.
You should have saved the life of an EMT.
She took the glue from him and screwed the cap back on. She didn't want it to dry out. Who knew how soon she might need it again, the way this trip was going. I'm sure it will do the job, she said. Just hold it for a little longer.
Alex, I'm sorry about just now.
His voice was quiet. Apologetic. She wished she could turn her head and look at him straight on.
I don't know what that was, he continued. I can't believe I was so rough with you.
I wasn't exactly pulling my punches.
But I'm not injured,
he reminded her sourly.
Not a scratch on me, as you put it.
I don't think that's entirely true anymore, she told him, brushing her fingers against the skin of his chest. She could feel the faint welts her nails had left. He inhaled sharply, both of them caught for 1 second in the memory, and her stomach contracted. She tried to turn her head, but he held her face still.
Wait, he cautioned.
They sat motionless in the charged silence while she counted to 60 in her head twice.
It's dry, she insisted.
Slowly, he lifted his fingers from her jaw. She turned to him, but his face was down as he searched the kit. He found the antibacterial spray and applied it liberally to her wound. Then he pulled out the roll of gauze and tape. Gently, and without looking her in the eye, he took her chin between his thumb and forefinger and repositioned her head. He taped the gauze in place.
We should sleep now, he said, as he pressed the last piece tight to her skin. We're both overwrought and not thinking clearly. We can reopen this discussion when we're rational.
She wanted to argue, but she knew he was right. They weren't acting like themselves. They were acting like animals, responding to a near-death experience with a subconscious imperative to continue the species. It was primitive biology rather than responsible adult behavior. She still wanted to argue. His fingers rested against the side of her neck, and she could feel her pulse begin to jump under his touch. He could, too.
Sleep, he repeated.
You're right, she grumbled, flopping back against the rumpled sleeping bag. She really was bone-weary.
Here.
He handed her his t-shirt. Where's mine?
In pieces. Sorry.
It was already too warm and stuffy inside the Humvee. She tossed his shirt aside and grinned remorsefully, feeling the glue pull. For people with quite limited resources, we are not being very careful with our things. He must have noticed the lack of air circulation as well. He leaned over and opened the back hatch again.
Like I said, we're overwrought.
He lay down next to her, and she curled into his chest, wondering if it would really be possible to sleep with him half-naked beside her. She closed her eyes, trying to will herself into unconsciousness. His arms wrapped around her, tentatively at first, and then, after a few seconds, more securely, almost like he was testing his resolve. If she'd been any less tired, she might have made the test harder for him. But despite her heightened awareness of his body and all the little volts of electricity that sparked where her nerve endings met his bare skin, she quickly drifted. As she surrendered to oblivion, one strange word circled through her head. Mine, her brain insisted as her thoughts faded to black. Mine. When Alex woke, the sun was still bright in the west, and the sleeping bag underneath her was damp with sweat. The shadows had shifted, and a shaft of light was hitting her full in the face, albeit through the tinted window. She blinked sleepily for a minute, waiting for her brain to wake up. Then she came to with a jolt as she realized she was alone. She sat up too quickly, making her head ache and spin. The back hatch of the Humvee was still open, and the warm, humid air sat heavily on her skin. Daniel was nowhere in sight. Neither was his t-shirt, so she had to swiftly and silently dig into her things to find something to wear before she could look for him. It was stupid, but if she was about to run into another team of assassins, she didn't want to do it in no more than a worn tan bra. She threw on her thin, oversized gray sweater because it was the first thing her fingers touched, not because it was weather appropriate. She pulled the PPK out of her bag and tucked it into the small of her back. As she was climbing out the open hatch, she heard the crinkle of paper under her knee. It was the receipt she'd written the email address on. Underneath that was another neatly printed note. Taking Einstein for a walk. Back soon. She shoved the note in her pocket. Still moving quietly, she climbed out of the Humvee. Lola was sprawled out in a patch of shade beside the water and food Daniel had left. Her tail started thumping against the grass when she saw Alex. Well, at least with Lola there, Alex knew that there was no one else around. Alex gulped down some water, wiped the sweat from her face with the sleeves of the sweater, then shoved them up as high as they could go. I don't even know which direction they went, she complained to Lola, scratching her ears. And you're in no shape to track them down, are you, girl? Though I bet you could pretty fast if you were on your feet. Lola licked her hand. Alex was very hungry. She explored the small stash of food Daniel had brought and settled for a bag of pretzels. She would definitely need to replenish their stores tonight, but she so hated leaving a trail. Of course, there were hundreds of possible routes they could have taken to any number of destinations. But if someone were persistent enough and had a little luck on his side, he might be able to put together a pattern. She was out of carefully prepared traps and well-thought-out plans, let alone bat caves. Her assets were money, guns, ammo, grenades, knives, a variety of venoms and chemical incapacitators, an assault vehicle, and one brilliant attack dog. Her physical liabilities included that same attention-demanding assault vehicle, one lame dog, her own somewhat lame body, one conspicuous face, one face off a wanted poster, more or less, and a lack of food, shelter, and options. Her emotional liabilities were even worse. She couldn't believe how much trouble she'd brought on herself in such a limited time. Part of her wanted nothing more than to rewind, to go back to her cozy little bathtub, her unbroken face, and her safety nets. To choose differently in that distant library and delete the email. But if she could turn back the clock, would she? Was that life of daily terror and loneliness really such a better option? She'd been safer, yes, but still hunted. In so many ways, wasn't her new, more endangered life a fuller existence? She was sitting next to Lola, slowly stroking her back, when she heard Daniel's voice approaching. After the first shock of alarm, she didn't panic that he was talking to someone else. There was a special edge in his voice that appeared only when he was speaking with Kevin. Einstein arrived first. He ran excitedly to Alex and touched his wet nose to her hand. He exchanged a snuffly greeting with Lola, then went to get a drink. Daniel walked into view, striding quickly down the center of the unkempt dirt road. He had a hat on. Beneath it, his brows were furrowed. He held the phone half an inch from his ear.
"I'm back now," he was saying. "I'll see if she's awake."
"No, I will not wake her if she's still sleeping."
Alex got to her feet, brushing debris from her backside and stretching. The movement caught Daniel's eye, and his expression shifted from annoyance to a slow, wide smile. Though she was a little exasperated, she couldn't help grinning back.
"She's right here. Just one more second of patience, brother dear."
Rather than hand her the phone, Daniel pulled her close for a lingering hug. With her face hidden in his chest, breathing in his smell, she smiled. But when he finally leaned away, she was shaking her head, her eyebrows raised in disbelief.
"Sorry," he said. "Wasn't thinking."
She blew out a frustrated breath, then held her hand out for the phone. He gave it to her with a sheepish grin, his other arm still loosely around her.
"Don't mind me. I'm just trying to keep us alive," she muttered, then spoke into the phone.
"Hello."
"Good morning. I see my idiot brother hasn't learned anything from his mistakes."
"What's happened?"
"Not much. A flurry of phone calls, but no one else has implicated himself at this point."
"Then why are you calling?"
"Because it feels like you and Daniel have an infinite capacity to screw things up. It's making me a nervous wreck."
"Well, it's been lovely chatting."
"Don't get mad, Oleander. You know I mean Daniel. I just wish you could somehow put a leash on him."
"He's new. He'll get it."
"Before he kills himself?" "You know I can hear you, right?" Daniel asked. "No one likes an eavesdropper," Kevin said loudly. "Give the girl some space."
"Here, just talk to him yourself. I'm going to sort our things out so we'll be ready to go when the sun sets." She handed the phone back to Daniel and freed herself. He didn't stay on much longer with his brother. They just exchanged a few insults while she walked back to the Humvee and surveyed the damage. The cargo hold was still total chaos. Well, she had plenty of time on her hands now and not much else productive to do. She pulled the PPK from the small of her back and put it away inside a Ziploc bag in her backpack. Next, she rolled up the sleeping bag and stashed it out of the way on the passenger seat so she could locate all the stray ammo. She heard Daniel climb in beside her. He went to work combing the space for loose objects.
"I am sorry," he said while he worked, not looking in her direction. "It's just you were sleeping and Einstein was restless and we seemed so alone here. It felt normal. I guess that should have been my first clue that I was committing a crime."
She kept her eyes on her work, too. "Imagine if you had woken up here alone."
"I should have thought of that."
I remember someone recently promising me that he would ask if it was okay before he breathed.
He sighed. Kevin's right, isn't he? I'm terrible at this.
She started organizing the different magazines into Ziploc bags and then sliding each into an outside duffel pocket. I see what you're doing there, she told him. You're making it so I have to either agree with Kevin or forgive you.
Is it working?
Depends. Did anyone see you?
No. We saw no signs of life aside from a few birds and squirrels. You know how most dogs chase squirrels? Einstein catches them.
That might come in handy if we have to live out of this Humvee any longer. I'm not much of a hunter.
One more night, right? We'll survive.
I truly hope so.
Do you want to save these?
Daniel asked, sounding confused.
Are they walnuts?
Alex glanced up to see which Ziploc he was referring to. Peach pits, she said.
Trash?
She took the bag from his hand and tucked it into the duffel she was reorganizing. Not trash, she said. I use them for the sodium cyanide that occurs naturally in the inner kernel of the pit. There's not much in each. I have to collect hundreds of pits to get a usable amount, she sighed. You know, I used to like peaches. Now, I can't stand them. She looked over and saw that Daniel was frozen in place, eyes wide.
Cyanide?
He sounded startled. One of my security systems. When it reacts with the right liquid acid, it creates hydrocyanic acid, colorless gas. I make ampules large enough to saturate a 10x10 room. Pretty basic stuff. I don't have access to high-end materials anymore. It's a lot of bathtub chemistry for me these days. Daniel's expression evened out, and he nodded like everything she'd just said was perfectly sane and normal. He turned back to collecting stray ammo. She smiled to herself. Alex had to admit she felt a little calmer when their gear was all organized and neatly sewed. The best thing about obsessive-compulsive disorder was the cozy high you got from a tidy space. She took stock of all the weapons that remained to her and was comforted by that as well. The earrings could not be replaced, and she was low on several compounds, but the majority of her arms were still in working order. For dinner, they had granola bars, Oreos, and a bottle of water they shared as they sat on the back edge of the open Humvee. Her legs dangled a good foot off the ground, but his toes touched. At his insistence, she took more Motrin. At least the over-the-counter pills were easily replaceable. She didn't need to be such a hoarder with those.
When do we leave? Daniel asked when they'd cleaned everything up.
She judged the position of the sun. Soon. 15 more minutes, and I think it will be dark by the time we meet the main road.
I know I'm in terrible trouble and probably deserve, I don't know, to be in solitary